Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello everyone, it is the Red Men Podcast. I am here, I am Paul Meach, and I am joined first and foremost by Mr. Tom Dutton. Hi.
Hello everyone. I'm turning more into that man behind me as the days go past, but
the white Mo Salah.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good look.
It's growing, yeah. It's something. I need a barbershop.
There's a touch of Art Garfunkel about here as well. Which is good.
I'll take that. There's many shouts that you could have said, and you picked a relatively good one there.
Bob Ross.
Bob Ross, another good one. Yeah. Sideshow Bob's been said in the past, so I'm glad no one said that.
Amazing.
Seth Rogen.
There's the one. Nailed it. Absolutely. Yeah, we're all sharing similar issues, whereas Errol's decided to tackle his is it dreads we're going for at the minute?
No, he was box braids or box plaits originally, because I haven't took them out in about 2 weeks. Now they're starting to dread up a little bit. I seen someone the other day say I looked the ringer of Divock from last season. Nice. So I think I'm probably going to take them out at some point this week, and we'll go again next week and get some fresh plaits back in.
You're working towards the Frank Rijkaard look is what you're going for. That's fair. Absolutely fair. Ross Chandler, you're handling things reasonably well.
Yeah, not too bad. If you're doing lookalikes, so just get it out there. Shaqiri or Bobby from King of the Hill. before anyone says it.
Sensational. Well, I can't top that. You've just pure Eminem battle rapped us there by getting out all of the insults before we could get to you. Great. Right, our kickoff warm-up question this week comes from Martin O'Neill. He wants to know what your perfect full English looks like. Tom?
See, this is a massive, a lot of people don't like a mushroom on a full English. A lot of people don't like a mushroom on a full English. That's not a full English. If you don't like them two things on a full English, it's not
that's
a full
thing.
English.
That's so, you said mushroom, Tom, you said mushroom twice.
That's fine. Canned tomato is what I meant to say. So, two sausages, two bacon, two eggs, beans, two hash browns, a black pudding, mushrooms, canned tomatoes, and two slices of bread, toast.
Sweet.
For breakfast, that's a lot, that.
That's a full English.
That's a full and a half English, that, mate.
Yeah.
Go on, Errol, what's on your full English?
Not even to be controversial, but I'm not even I don't really like full Englishes as a whole. But I kind of have a mashup of things that I would put together on mine, because I don't really like eggs. The only form of eggs I can eat is in an omelette. So if I can put it in an omelette, then I'd have an omelette. I'd have some beans in there. I'd have some toast. I'd have two sausages. I'd have two bacon. I'd also go with a few Jamaican extras on the side if I was doing it properly. And I'd have the fried plantain in there. I'd have some fried dumplings. And I'd also probably have a little, if it wasn't normal bread, I'd have Jamaican bread, which is just hard dough bread. Get it from Danny's in Toxteth. If you're from Liverpool, it's a game changer.
And then a small heart attack for brunch. Is that what you're going for there? After your fried dumplings for brunch?
Probably, yeah. But that's probably how we do it on either mine or my mum's. That's how it gets done.
Ross is a former professional chef.
Okay.
Yeah, which I wish you never said now, because my answer is really controversial. Pre-lockdown, I think the answer would have been dead easy. It just would have been a spoons breakfast. like you get all that shit that Tom says plus the pints.
You mean Wetherspoons?
Yeah, for £4 or whatever it is. I mean, what more would you want? But everything that Tom said, I think you go for the full works. I think you've got to have black pudding in there because it's just the best. And something to make a putty with, something to mop up your beans, bit of tomatoes. Yeah.
Never had black pudding. Never had black pudding.
It's amazing. It's like people don't like it because it's like, oh, it's blood. Nah, it's blood and spices and it tastes amazing. Like, you know what I mean?
There are plenty of other things that people put into the bodies, which is basically a lot of like laundry detergents and other white looking things. Like, it's all told. You know, the black pudding one is an interesting because it's I would never actively buy black pudding. I never have it in my house, but I also never take it off a breakfast if I'm having one out anywhere. The simple answer for me is well, it's a tavern brekkie. So the tavern on Smithdown Road, you go in there, you get the full English and you swap out. For me, I can't stand mushrooms, so swap mushrooms out and put hash browns on instead. And that way you've got sausages, loads of bacon, eggs, beans, black pudding, hash browns and fat toast. I'm trying my best to cut out bread at the minute and like... So, like, I'm never getting anywhere near tavern bread ever again because it's not even, like, you can have brown bread, you can have wholemeal bread, but, like, medium. So, this is, like, super thick sliced.
That's like Jamaican bread. That's like Jamaican bread, Paul.
Yeah.
Doorstep toast, it's, like, 2 inches thick. It's amazing. But what's your thoughts on American breakfast? Because if we're talking about tavern breakfast, they do an American, which is everything we've just said with 3 pancakes and syrup on the side. Like...
I kind of like that, but again, that's because I'm a bit weird.
Ross is shaking his head. Ross is probably
mixing two fucking dishes together. Just have one or the other.
Do you not like bacon and pancakes, though, with the syrup?
No.
Oh, I think that's a nice little combo, though, you know. Like, when I went to America years ago...
Sorry, Ross. I just can't let this stand. You can come back to this point in a second, but Ross...
Yeah.
Like, that's like saying... Don't have oral sex and sex in the same session.
I mean, you talked to the wrong person about that.
because they both can be standalone entities, one or the other. No, nonsense. Go for the full works. If you can have pancakes as part of your brekkie, why would you not have pancakes as part of your brekkie?
Because you can have syrup and all that shit.
It's a rhetorical question, Ross. No,
that was perfectly said, mate. I couldn't have said it better myself.
what about beans in a bowl? Do you remember me and Ross when we went to Qatar? We got the fancy breakfast in the airport, and he put beans in a bowl. I'm not a big fan of that.
It's a modern thing, and I think it's probably because the cost of beans must have become really expensive. Because even the tavern started doing that. A ramekin of beans is one of my greatest pet hates in breakfasts.
Yeah.
Like, just pour the beans on the plate, but it's not. It's like, no, I'm going to give you a teeny tiny little ceramic dish full of 5 beans. There you go. Enjoy. Nonsense. I should have too many beans on. Every breakfast should have too many beans on it.
Yeah.
You know what? You don't prefer to have the option of what other, you know, pieces of the breakfast have beans on them. So if you want to dunk your sausage into beans, you've then got the option. You're not being forced into having beans on different parts of your breakfast.
I understand if you've got really bad OCD issues, and my son's got that, like he has to have, he enjoys his gravy in a little pot and stuff. I drown the motherfucker in gravy.
If I end up having a full English closer to 12 or 1 o'clock, it becomes a brunch, and then I add chips to it. Yeah, so that's a little chip combo, so that's a good shout as well.
Yeah, that's a Wetherspoons all day brekkie, that all day, isn't it? Like, get a fat scoop of chips onto your breakfast as well. Oh, cholesterol.
When you started doing that in Carvery's as well, that was a game changer.
Absolutely. Right, okay, we're going to drive into the football topics then. Let us know your ideal full English breakfast in the comments section underneath. And if you're doing, if you listen to this on podcast and apps, do give us a 5-star review because it does help. That would be much appreciated. Right, okay, Ross, you want to talk about Euro 96?
Yeah, well, not specifically. It just made me think of the subject. So I know it started yesterday, but must have been 6 or 7, Euro 96, right around that. And I don't really remember it. So I just wanted to know what people's first memories were of an international tournament, what players that you liked. You know, was there a team out there everyone thought was going to be shit, but they were decent, you know, something like that. So, like, France 98 was my first one, and it was just, like, just loads of icons and, you know, the shirts, the way they marked it in France was just amazing. But I was just interested to know what, you know, the people at home and you guys, what, you know, your first tournament you remember.
Let's make it me feel dead old by having you go first on this.
It's probably, go ahead, Daryl. You go first because my answer is kind of boring.
Well, yeah, I think mine's probably going to be very short as well. I was five. I think I almost remember, I don't know if it is 96 or again 98, but the McDonald's did like toys of the Euros when they came out. And I don't know if it was like a little mascot one that year.
Euro 96 was famed for Coca-Cola having a deal where you collected ring pulls. And if you sent them off, you could get like a Euro 96 music sampler, which had... Wake Up Boo by the Boo Radleys on and a couple of other like absolute bangers. If you got a few more, you could get this footy. There was a little footy you could get. That was like on the schoolyard. That's what everyone wanted. They want these Euro 96 footies. And eventually, I'm sure they even had a competition where you could win like a full kit for your school team. And a lad in our school won it because we went to Blue Coat and it was a Coca-Cola kit. It was red. So we weren't allowed to play in it.
Oh, shit. I think France 98 was the Mackey's toys because
they had
the bird, didn't they? I think I've got a frisbee somewhere with the France 98 bird.
All right, well, that's probably what I remember the memorabilia from then. So again, my memory for 96 is even more limited, I can imagine, in that sense.
What was the first tournament you remember, though? The
first tournament I remember is probably 98 because, I'm hoping I'm right in saying this. I think Jamaica... We're in the World Cup that year. They had a belt.
Dion Burton leading the line that year.
Robbie Earl in it as well.
The belt of kids. And I remember, I think I seen something the other day. I don't know if it was either Nigeria or Cameroon. They tried to come out with sleeveless.
That was Cameroon after.
Was that years later? But yeah, that was probably my earliest memory about international football, probably 98 then. Then obviously after that, it was the haircut from... Was it Roberto Carlos that had the hair?
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo.
2002 as well.
Did you even watch football when you were younger, Harold? Jesus Christ.
2002.
I had the haircut.
Yeah. It was 2002. Defo was the first one. I was born in 94, so I would have been eight, I guess. But the thing is, I used to go to an after school club, and that's where we watched the games. But the issue was that there was a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater next to it. So, like, I remember vividly probably moving away from that screen of the footy to take my turn on the Tony Hawk's game. So I don't even remember too much of that one. And then international football's never been massive for me, just purely because I don't have an affiliation with England. And I know everyone will talk about that and say, oh, stop doing that or whatever, if they're not from Liverpool. But I just feel like whenever I've watched international tournaments, I've always watched the team playing against England. You know what I mean? So it's never been like, it's never been one of them where I watch a certain team. It's just, right, I'm picking this team for this game, or I'll just watch the monumentous games where there's a brilliant players. So that's the thing for international tournaments for me. I don't care until it gets to the semis because there's a lot of shit teams in international tournaments.
Yeah. It's mad. Like, my first that I remember was Italia 90, and I'd have been seven at the time. And I only really remember it because it was just a mad time. Like, obviously, had World in Motion was by New Order was just massive. And you'd have it on, like, everyone would play it constantly. You'd go out and buy the single, and my auntie and uncle would have it in their house. And my cousin, he was 3 years older than me, so he was 10, and he was banging into it. And we'd be playing footy in the street, and, like, my auntie would run out and go, Roger Miller's just scored for Cameroon, and we'd all go, rah! And we'd all do. We had this like boss like dance celebration. They'd doing the corner flags when he scored, so we'd all be doing the celebrations and stuff, and like having because back in the day you did support England, you know, so we like, and Gaza crying when he got booked, so we knew he was going to be missing the final and all that kind of stuff.
And he only could shit himself in that one.
I can't remember, but I remember it, but a lot of that I remember. Being around it, not the footy. You remember the footy because you've seen the footy since more than anything else. Euro 96 was my first major one because I was 13 and like it coming back on. I remember me and my dad went to watch Czech Republic versus Russia at Anfield, and it was 4-3 to the Czech Republic. It's the best game of the whole tournament, and we got free tickets because my mum's school got given a load, so we got to go to these games. And it's funny because I remember my uncle and my cousin, he waited for the brewery, so he got like these boss tickets. and it was Italy were in the same group, and they were playing in Old Trafford, so they went to that, and it was this boring drab, like 0-0 or 1-1, and we got these tickets to watch Czech Republic Russia, which on paper was the worst game, and it ended up being an absolute belt. Like Patrick Berger would have been playing in that, Karol Poborski, I guess probably Nedved would have been in that team, and I've still got the ticket in ours somewhere. It's just like, yeah, it was absolutely amazing. That tournament was just boss, because footy was just on constantly. It was on at a time where you could watch it. You were at an age where you were hanging out with your mates, so like we didn't even watch it religiously. We'd be in town and you'd walk past like John Lewis and the tellies would all be in the window, and you'd stop and you'd watch the footy for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, and then go about your day. Like, yeah, that was Euro 96 was amazing.
I was going to ask, I mean, you've obviously know more about it. If there has to be one game without telling me the score so I can actually go back and watch it, Paul, you said that one's your favourite, but I'd be interested.
I've just ruined it for telling you the score. But that game, it's actually annoying. It's actually Friday. I think it's Friday at 6:30 or 6:15. It's on telly.
Yeah.
I would recommend if people don't want to watch our Be Liverpool watch along, which they might do, they might not. I'd watch the first hour of it if you can. It's an absolutely brilliant game of footy.
Bosh, yeah, I'll definitely get onto it.
Yeah, that's just a few in France 98, I ended up watching like 2 weeks ago, like just all the goals. But it's just amazing like how bad the defending is, how bad the goalkeeping is. But even like that, for just pure nostalgia point of view, it's like the kits, I said before, like the marketing behind it. But like all the teams you think of, like Holland had led, like Davids, Cliver, Seedorf, everyone was in the pomp. You know, Brazil had the Ronaldo, Rivaldo, I think Bebeto played in that one as well. It was just like, it just, like, I don't want to
use that one anymore. Like,
yeah, exactly. But like, it just seemed like that was the best it ever got, and it's not been the same since.
They're the era as well where everyone kind of captions and memes nowadays, like today's kids will never understand the true Brazilian greats. It's always from like those competitions from like 98 to 2002. It was that squad.
It's funny, isn't it? Because like he talked to my dad about it, and like he loved the Brazil team of the 70s. So when I talk about those Brazil teams, he's like, "What are you talking about? Not a patch." But we do. We properly. It's an era thing, isn't it? Like, yeah. You know, I think, you know, in another 10 years, people will talk about like World Cup 2006 as being the one. You know, that was the one. And footy's never been the same since that World Cup and all that. Whereas I was just on the lash for those World Cups. I didn't really take them in the same way. I was blathering. I think I was working in a bar on Allerton Road, and I pretty much watched every game of that tournament. But I pretty much watched every game of that tournament blathered, because I was living with my mum and dad. Couldn't be bothered to go home, so just stay in the pub after I finished and just watch all the games. Yeah, I watched like all kind of so much crap in that tournament. It was hilarious. But yeah, let us know your first memories of international tournaments in the comments. Always interesting to get people's nostalgia on these things. Because there are some just genuinely brilliant moments. Like for World Cup 98, I was 15. That was the one I probably remember best, because I was of an age where I was too young to go out drinking, and I was old enough that I cared about it and knew a lot about footy, and I was playing footy loads at the time and stuff. Like, yeah, that was a bad belt of a tournament. Brazil, Scotland in the opening game. What a time to be alive. Right, okay, so we'll move on then. Tom, you've been watching old footy adverts?
Yeah, I found something the other day on YouTube, you know, and then it just pops up to you, and it was loads of Boss footy adverts. You remember the Yoga Benito ones, it was the Take It to the Next Level one. I was just wondering, like, what everyone's favourite footy adverts were, because, and an extension of that, like, footy adverts now have kind of got a bit crap. I mean, there was one in 2015, and Nike won the last game, but that was made with animation. And then there was the Messi and Salah one, but I watched that back before this, and the ball animations are terrible.
Is that the Pepsi one?
Yeah, but like, I used to love watching all them ones, like especially the Take It to the Next Level one, where it starts at a free kick and ends at a free kick, and you're seeing all these amazing players, and it must have cost a bomb to make, but I absolutely loved them.
Is that the first person one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I must admit, that's the last great football advert, I think. There used to be, and it still is to some extent, but when the major tournaments came around, Nike and Adidas would be in competition to create the most iconic advert. Mm-hmm. So like Brazil, we did a video on retro football, if you remember, Tom, which is like the best footy advert ever, if anyone wants to check out that video, still there. I went through most of the really good ones on
the Scorpio ball.
There was that. There was like the one where the plan, the mission was it, where they made, and they made a game about it and everything, with like Van Gaal put his team of secret agent footballers together with Edgar Davids, and he could see the laser beams with his sonnies and stuff like that, like the tripwires. And but like Nike doing the airport advert was the fit, one of the first great ones.
Yeah,
they're kicking it through and they're playing it through the airport and they're bringing it down, and then someone hits the shot and it hits the post, and they all go, oh.
It's Ronaldo at the end. I watched it literally. Another really good one was they're in the tunnel, and it's just the premises of them. They're in the tunnel waiting to go out for the footy, and then they just start having a kick about and just run onto the pitch. Is and all that, the fans are like, what?
Brazil Portugal one,
yeah,
it's quality. Yeah.
And then the cage one's my favorite, where they have it in the cage match. And
it's got the music as well, the Presley music, that's just what makes it bang.
Yeah. Exactly, that's the thing. And the editing of it, it's fantastic as well. That's what I was mainly looking at, because they're getting these footballers to play, and obviously you can't use them in every shot, so it's the way they're using extras and the way they're using these decoys and stuntmen to kind of fall over and hurt themselves so the players don't. And it's really, really well done, that cage one. But I just watched them, and just nostalgia like hit me. It was great.
Well, I had a crazy idea the other day, since we're trying to, you know, wrap up this title still. How's the best way to deliver it with some sort of like kind of entertainment value now? I feel like it'd be perfectly fitting for Daniel Craig to play James Bond and deliver us the Premier League title in some way or another. I just think there's something that could be made of that for entertainment value that would last the ages, considering we're not physically able to be there to celebrate. So if anyone wants to make that happen...
Yeah. Didn't they do something like that for the Olympics, where it was like the Queen jumping out with James Bond or something like that? Yeah. Daniel Craig, he lives for it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It turns up. I mean, he probably had to film it in America, because that's the only time he seems to appear to be a Liverpool fan. But some of those adverts, like the one that goes, I remember the first big one, and the people older than me will obviously remember more, but there was like I think it was World Cup 94, a Nike one, and it was players painted on the sides of buildings and billboards, and like Ian Wright was in that one, and had Georgie Campos in it, and like the advertisements were playing footy, and like Campos ends up diving and saving it and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, there used to be some absolutely brilliant ones.
There's terrible ones now. Do you remember the Man City one? It wasn't that long ago.
Oh, if you clap for the champions or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like
that's what it's coming down to, you know what I mean? That's where it's going to. Whereas like there used to be so much innovation with it all, and now it's the City players walking through a tunnel. It's like, oh, it's awful.
Is it to the tune of if you're happy and you know it?
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. What's the word? Because it doesn't scan. I'm pretty sure as well. Like, I'm sure it doesn't fit in.
I've got
like,
that's right why here. You don't remember it, Paul.
Oh no.
It actually never worked.
I remember it vividly, but just not the song. It's because it just makes me feel ill. Go on, Tom. What have you got it?
Well, I've got it. Yeah. Let me.
It's like if you're clapping for the champions, something.
You found it far too quickly.
It's already terrible. You ready? If you're here for the champions, clap your hands. If you're celebrating now, clap your hands. If you're happy that we did it and you really want to show it, if you're here for Man City, clap your hands. It's so bad. It's so bad.
I love that. Because that's like, is it Etel Salat or something like that? Like it's one of the like foreign companies have paid for that to be made. Oh, God.
Yeah. Right. I love the footballs though. Like every time there'd be a big advert, it'd either be the footies that had come out or the boots that had come out afterwards, and you'd see them on the schoolyard for weeks, and you'd be the coolest kid on the yard if you had got the new Total 90 ball or the Scorpio ball from back in the day. Like that was, I think that's what got us all hooked on the adverts, because you just wanted to go and play with the balls or the boots that were in the adverts.
Yeah, you were going to say the footballs then. I thought you were going full Andy Gray on us for a second there. Yeah. Oh no, amazing. Yeah, again, if you're watching, let us know what your favourite football advert of all time is. There's so many classics, and do check out that video on the Retro Footy channel actually, because I mean, it was good fun wrapping them all up, and it is definitely still there as well.
Fernando Torres one as well, I've not mentioned that was a pretty decent advert as well.
It is actually, yeah, the Torres, the taking over Liverpool, the Spanish influence.
That was good.
Definitely. And it, Nunca Caminara Solo come from that, which is what everyone learned. Not to say you'll never walk alone in Spanish, because it's the start of the advert. Anyway, yes. Errol, I have come from a similar angle on the topic this week, but I'll throw it to you first and foremost. I want to talk And I'm going to talk in a little bit about, obviously, the announcement that football has been given the green light to return from June 1st. We'll talk about that in more depth in a moment. But, Errol, there's a little issue around that, in and around that, before we get that far, that you want to talk about.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it's just grating on me, because I remember from weeks when this, you know, the situation first happened, one of the things that we said was, you know, we caveat everything with go back to football when it is safe and fit to do so, and the you know, there are the safeguards in place to make sure that fans, as well as players, staff, all of the above can be protected and the game can go ahead safe. And I think everyone bought into that premise to begin with. Now, obviously, the people that should be most invested within that premise is the footballers themselves, because it is their livelihood. A lot of footballers after that point came out and, you know, campaigned to various stay-at-homes, do this, do X, Y, and Z, because we're on board with the government and everybody else's current thinking. My thing is, now you can't turn around and say in one breath we're scared to come back into the reality of the workplace, which our workplace is a football ground, a training pitch, but then at the same time there are other footballers that have been seen and being punished at the moment and being fined for breaking lockdown rules, because clearly they don't share the same ideologies as the other footballers. So you can't really band together and say, as footballers, we're united now and we're going to delay the project restart, because there are a handful of you that are ruining it, in my eyes, for the rest of you that have got a clear message, if that's what it is meant to be.
I loved Kyle Walker's apology for going to see his family in Sheffield, and this is the hard thing, because on a human level, is because he tried, like, the mental health and me struggles I've been through kind of angle, and that's I'm not saying that's wrong, because a lot of people are going through that, but that's the point. Loads of people are going through that. Everyone's got their own version of my family wanted a hug. Everyone's got someone in the family who's going through problems, or we're going through problems, or there's always something. You know, we've celebrated two birthdays in our house on our own. You know, like we little lad had his birthday, and you get them. I might just cause it's his birthday and he deserves that because it's his birthday. And when you start finding yourself saying, "Oh, come on," because it's I'm the exception to the rule. Exactly. Everyone's in this. The same boat in the football. You're right. And the problem is, of course, footballers are also very easy targets for all this. And there's tons of people breaking rules.
They set themselves up to fall, because that was my initial point. It was, I just don't want to see them set themselves up to fall, to turn around and say, you know, stay at home, this is the campaign, put it all over Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And then you see on their Snapchat on another, in someone else's, that they're at a party or a lockdown situation. And it's just like, the two don't go hand in hand for me. And it just makes the whole situation a lot more difficult to say with any certainty that they're all on the same page, because clearly they're not. They're putting a message out to the public that they're clearly not sharing between themselves. They're talking between themselves and telling each other what they're doing over day to day. So other footballers are aware that people within their own team are breaking rules, might be on a consistent basis or a not consistent basis. But then you'll get the team captain saying, you know, we're afraid of our, you know, we're afraid for our own health and safety. For me, it just jars, and I'm just jarred, and I'm probably a little bit exhausted, because, you know, we're all Liverpool fans, and we, you know, selfishly, there's reasons for us to want to get this season underway and get it wrapped up. But I just think, from the moral thing, I knew this at some point, that this situation was going to happen, and I'm a little bit disappointed.
So that's why I'm kind of proud of Liverpool as a team. I mean, we've had none of that come out. I mean, Everton had, I think, Moise Keane with a massive backlash from all the Evertonians, and rightly so. So I don't think we can really say anything about that. He knows he's a knobhead, and everyone who supports Everton knows he's a knobhead, the exact same way that if a Liverpool player went out and did the same thing, everyone would kind of go, "What are you doing?" You know what I mean? Why are you doing that? But I am really, really proud of the way that not just the players have gone about it, because all the players in the Premier League are probably going about it that way, but I love the way that Liverpool as a club have shown that, you know what I mean, the way that they've used their YouTube channel and everything to be able to kind of go, right, we're going to kind of do the same things we used to, but we're doing it here, and we're going to show you we're doing it. And I think putting even that bit more limelight on it is, like, if the players have an inkling of, oh, I might want to go do that, no, it's all over YouTube, you can't do that. And I really love the way that we're able to not kind of take the model high ground on this one, but we can just be like, well, yours players did that, our players did not at all.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with that though, mate, because
until they do.
There's no, exactly. And that's why there's no point, I think, and this is why they go, just to bring it back to the Kyle Walker stuff, you're fine to think Kyle Walker's a knobhead as a human, but to try and bring some sort of sport and banter into it is a dangerous game, because you'd only end up on a slippery slope, because it's just going to take, and let's face it, it's going to be Adam Lallana, isn't it? I just think, is he going to be able to stay? I think he's the one who's going to crack first, and you can tell because he's a man in his 30s, he changed his hair loads, and that's a sign of a loose cannon if ever there was.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One. I wouldn't be shocked if Adam Lallana was the first one to break quarantine. But you've got to be careful, because it just ends up being another length of rope that you're drawing out to inevitably hung by. When it's just a bunch of individuals who were breaking rules or whatever. But it's interesting, Ross, because I think the footballers breaking the lockdown rules, this is what the season returning is going to hang on for me. Because, and this is why some of this needs to be determined still. Yeah, we're being told that it's they've got the green light for it to come back. But if footballers start getting infected, it's gonna change the scenario pretty quickly. And they're gonna have everything on their side, I think, to make it as good for them as possible. They're gonna be the best cared for, the best treated, the best locked down, the best quarantined, the best managed people during this entire crisis in this whole country, because they've got the money around it and they've got all the facilities. But it's gonna take one idiot. One idiot's gonna go out and he's gonna end up infecting this whole team, and that'll be it.
That's it. It's curtains.
Yeah, it's difficult because it's not just the money that they get, which, you know, they've been thrown under the bus by the government once already. You know, so the limelight was already on them from the start to, you know, raise money and do whatever. But, you know, the stuff with, like, Jack Grealish, Kyle Walker, you know, you said it before, like, where are the people that, you know, normal people considered staying at home, abiding by the rules? We all want to go out and do things that we can't go and do. You know, whereas they lead a privileged life. Yes, they work hard for it. But, you know, and particularly with the mixed messaging from Sunday, it only takes one, two, three, like you said, idiots from clubs to go, well, if everything's all right now, we can go back to football. But if I can go run around a football pitch for an hour and a half with, you know, 21 other people, or, well, I can do it X, Y, and Z and go and do that instead. The problem I've got is the fact that the individual clubs are the ones that are doing it. So, like, you know, they're doing the testing because they're paying for it and stuff like that. So I think Wolves started doing it yesterday or today with non-playing staff, saying, oh, we'll test you and do that. That's fine. But, like, Brighton said they tested positive for one person, but they'd already shown their hand a couple of weeks ago that they didn't want to get relegated. Yeah. Dynamo Dresden in exactly the same position, like, they didn't want to get relegated. Someone else has got it. I think there's a trust issue there for me.
Yeah.
Not just that there's individual clubs, just as a whole, of saying, why isn't a governing body like the FA or the Premier League going, we'll do all the testing, we'll keep an eye on everything? Because if they know that, it's the same as when they do drug tests for players. They know what they can and can't do. Yeah. They're going to go and do drugs, but it's a lot more you know, professional doing that.
I'm pretty sure they've hired an independent company to do the testing. I think I did read that yesterday. Please feel free to correct me on any of this stuff in the comments, by the way, because yeah, I don't obviously know the 100% certainty, but you're right. I don't think the testing could be done exclusively in house, because you're right, there would need to be a degree of, you know, that you're
impartiality.
Right. It opens the doorway for underhanded behaviour, because you're right. Because let's face it, all of a sudden, if it's a team really struggling, they lose the first two or three games of this, and then all of a sudden their squad gets entirely infected. They're going to be like, you know, you're right. It opens up to the chance of conspiracy theories. It's still a bit early to know about all these things, but I think that's where we're at, because I'm seeing it from a different perspective today, since Sunday, because obviously they said schools are going back for early years, and my wife's a teacher and she's an early years teacher. My kids are obviously all in early years as well. And you start to think about the factors that need to be considered in all of this. And obviously we're still away, so there's still time to get this right. But like, the just making sure that the workplace is safe for people to return to and all this kind of stuff is a very, very, you know, there's we're so far away from footy coming back. It's on the right steps. I think we all want it to come back. Look, football fans, football is so big to us. We literally dedicate masses of time each week to talking about it. It clearly means loads to us. If you're sat here watching this or listening to this podcast, footy means loads to you, and you're not wrong to want your chief source of entertainment back in any way, shape or form. But when you start to look at it from the players' end, I can understand why they're getting a little bit windy about certain things. It doesn't hold up, Tom, when you see people, you know, when you're faced with a world where there's 50-year-old women who are having to work the counters at a co-op with minimal PPE, you know, footballers' complaints will fall on deaf ears. But I can understand why we would all want it. If I said to you guys tomorrow, right, you're coming back into this office, you'd want to know what the specific plans were and exactly how it was going to be, how exactly you were going to be kept as safe as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We're talking about all these players, and that Tyrone Mings has been quite vocal on Twitter recently. And you say, do you want to know the plans? He said on yesterday, let's see what else they come out with. If you believe everything in the press, then I'm currently preparing myself to play with a mask with gloves for less than 45 minutes each way whilst quarantining in Australia. You know what I mean? So he has no idea. It's quite refreshing to hear his comments and stuff about how he's just saying, look, we'll play. We're doing the relegation zone. That's kind of on us. I'm paraphrasing massively here, by the way, but he's just kind of saying, yeah, we'll kind of play then. I'm sure a lot of footballers do realise the position they're in terms of being privileged. I mean, I know Dejan Lovren has come out and said they need a break. I think with that kind of stuff, it's just because he's in a completely different bubble and world, and he's like, well, I need to de-stress because of this, and that's fair enough. While you're right, there's people who are still working every single day, putting themselves at risk, who are like, I need to de-stress by putting myself in a safe position for me and my family, you know what I mean? I think it's so hard because we're still finding out. We're still struggling to figure out what's going on, like what the government are saying. They're coming out and saying these things, broad statements, and a lot of people aren't understanding them. I'm one of them, where you're like, what does that actually mean? Does that mean we can do this? How are we meant to do this? So then how are football teams meant to put plans in place when, okay, can we have three people train at the same time? Do you have to have rotations of things? Can people be here, stationed here?
It's people are asking questions to which there are currently no answers. And because football exists in this 24-hour news cycle, it's everyone's wants more, and they want it more now. And actually, for the first time in a wider sense, we all want to know more information, because what the government has done so far has been far too vague and lacking detail. By the end of the week, we'll probably know loads more than we know now. But when you don't know the information, and particularly when it's something impacting you, like, again, I was very much on the whole, I understand footballers' fears. And then me and Chris talked about it on the Mate Pajak podcast last week. And he was like, well, look, everyone's got to work. If you don't want to work, you don't have to work. And then having seen it, when it comes home to you and you realise, like, I've seen the fears first, you know, close up. And my wife's being told she's got to go back to school. She's got to go back and teach. At some point in the next 3 weeks, all being well, she'll be back in the classroom again. But what does that look like? And all of a sudden, you don't realise that, like, what measures are being put in place. They haven't explained how they're going to be protected on an individual basis. They haven't quite explained who, how many other people are going to be alongside, and they haven't explained the people who are going to be, they're going to be, how many kids they're going to be looking after. They don't know what the working environment's going to look like. Nobody knows the answers to these questions yet. So I can understand why there's tons of footballers. Well, I don't know that there's tons of footballers. I can understand why there will be some footballers thinking, well, you know, understandably upset that they're being told that this is happening, because, you know,
I think, does it, without trying to sound stupid maybe, but what, does it make a difference for the individuals that don't come from this country as well, though? Because maybe they're listening to news from their native lands and how the situation globally is being handled, and maybe that's adding to their anxiety, because we might be handling things completely different over here.
They're getting, footballers are getting pressures from all kinds of sides. You know, they're getting the pressures from their football clubs, because look, football clubs are businesses. And if they don't go back to work eventually, they will not have a bit, you know, the football clubs will go under. It'll happen. We're starting to see it in different leagues around the world. Some clubs are being wound up because they can't justify the expenses. And the bigger you get, the further you've got to fall. So they're going to be getting them pressures. They're going to be getting pressures from fans who are saying, you know, they need to do, and from government saying, like, you know, they need to entertain the nation somehow. And then they're going to be getting pressures from their, like, the wives and the partners and the mums and dads and their kids, and saying, don't go and put yourself in that situation, because we want you to be able to come home. And so,
well, it's,
and
not again, even the footballers themselves, Paul, you're exactly right. What if the kid's got a serious illness? What if the kid's got bad asthma? And they're like, well, look, if I put myself at risk, I'm not going to know. Yes, you can do all the testing you want, but I could come home, give my kid that illness, and then that's on me then, because I wanted to go back to work, or I've been forced to go back to work. And then if you're then looking at it and going, to your boss, you forced me to go back to work, now this has happened, I'm gone, I'm not working with you anymore. And it just destroys the thing, them kind of relationship.
The thing that it is, though, is that, like, when I hear a bit of complaints from other sectors, I get it, because you've got an incompetent government passing it down to, let's be honest, either unfunded or incompetent local governments, who are then passing it down to local bosses, who are then are not experts in fields, and they're then telling the staff to come back in. So you've got so many layers of trust, and if you don't trust it from the top, then your trust is only going to get thinner and thinner as you get closer and closer to your role within this. As far as footballers go, on the grand scheme of things, everyone's going to have to start taking risks, because until there's a cure, everyone's eventually just going to have to go back to work in some way, shape or form. Otherwise, there will not be a work again to go back to in the long term future. And footballers are, at least, as I said, of everyone who's going to have to go back to work, they're going to be the best protected of everyone. And you might argue they're, at least they're doing the physical contact, which, you know, we're not going to be sweating and breathing on each other. They can't do the social distancing in the same way, but they have also got, again, they're going to be put in far better circumstances and situations than all of us, you know. So it's not, there's no ideal solution, but they're probably likely to be the best of it.
The other argument is a sense of, like, if they don't want to work, I fully understand that, but they're probably getting full-time wage and a decent wage at that. To what point do you go, well, fine, you want to stay off, but we're going to pay you your full wage. Then what do you think? Well, we're not getting 100 grand a week. Okay, sound, I might go back to work for a little bit.
And that's it. And we've got a culture of fear around this, and rightly so, by the way. But, like, the whole stay at home message needed to be underpinned with letting everyone know just how hard and terrible the situation is. And, like I said, I've seen it, had it. It's horrible. We've lost a family member to it. It's absolutely horrendous. If the virus wasn't there, you know, it's a real thing. People are dying from it. It's something that needs to be, that always needs to be factored in. But this is the mental situation we're in, where you're having to, there's now an increased risk factor to just leaving the house. And all of us take that gamble every single time we step outside our front doors and we go shopping, and we do that. And, you know, the problem is what all this boils down to, football is a capitalist sport. It's run by money, and money is going to determine a lot of this. And you're right, is that footballers will have the choice. I think ultimately, I think the vast majority of them want to play, if I'm being perfectly honest. It is always the naysayers that come out, you know, their voices always ring, you know, are always the loudest. But the vast majority of footballers, that's what they do. That's what they've built their lives for. They do just want to get back to kicking a footy again. And I'm sure most of them wouldn't be that arsed. I'm sure Kyle Walker's not arsed about going shoulder to shoulder with footballers, because he wouldn't be having the interest in parties and birthday trips that he's been having so far. And I'm sure he's not alone in that. But
do you think they're in a culture and an environment where they've been too protected? Because when you said that, then I thought, like, there's people who work in the NHS, like, we all know someone probably works in there, and they're going in, like, day in, day out, not for a great wage, underprotected, you know, in every sense of the way, risking their lives to save other people on that scale of things. Like, I fully understand where the footballers are coming from, but when you compare the two, like, you know, it's nowhere near as bad as going to the hospital. It's, the null and voiders are saying it's too soon to bring football back are probably the same people that are going to the chippy.
Yeah.
Like, what are those people fucking risking their lives as well?
True. It's dangerous, isn't it, though, to get, because you're right, but it's dangerous when we start drawing comparisons with, like, the NHS workers and football workers and all that kind of stuff. Which because they are protected and they have been sheltered, and they've been sheltered, you know, most of their adult lives, and they've got all that buffer around them. And I think we're careful because I think we use that as a noose to hang them with sometimes, because as though money protects you from every, you know, ill and stress in life.
I meant the environment they've been brought up in for years of being protected, and you don't have to do anything. Is that subliminally gone into the heads now and gone, actually, well, I don't want to do that?
Yeah, maybe that's the case.
This is why, you know, I didn't want to speak on it for, you know, the last couple of weeks, because I kind of wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt for as long as, you know, we could get away with it. But literally, you know, for about 3 weeks in, the first one with Kyle Walker and then Jack Grealish, there's been a few. Even I think there was a Chelsea player that was caught on Snapchat on Monday, and I'm just like, again, it's just another thing where you're just like, how many times can we see it now before we actually discuss it and think, you know, there's probably a little bit more to it?
I mean, as ever, the bad people always make it worse for the worst of society.
Well, it's a small handful of them, definitely. But I think that is dangerous because it can mix up with the message of the core group.
And it goes to say, the moment, this is the point, is we're talking about a hypothetical situation still. We're under the current rules.
Yeah.
Like, in 3 weeks' time, if there isn't another spike, and there will be, because thanks VE Day, but there will be a doubtless, you know what I mean? So we probably will. It'll change, I'm sure it will, but who knows? The point is the rules will have loosened in a few weeks, potentially, in which case this won't necessarily be quite a big deal. But the moment, that's what's happening, is the people who are most directly impacted it are looking at this saying, well, hang on a second, I can't see how I can possibly go back into work given the current situation, and the right to think that. But of course, they're not being asked to go back today. Well, some people are, so it's going to be, it's definitely one to watch. And I think, look, from a pure football fan perspective, I think we could all do with it. And I think particularly when you're seeing, like, the Bundesliga looks like it's going to be back this weekend, when you're seeing football and sport is starting to return, and we're starting to see the first little green shoots, whether the government, whether they're right to or not, it's not up to us to make that. You know, we can decide whether we like it or not, but this stuff is happening. When you start to see that happen, it does make sense that, you know, we can have something to look forward to. But, you know, we'll have to see. I don't think any one of us would like to live in a world where we feel responsible for anyone getting ill or whatever. We'd like to live in a world where it could all just go away. But if it's not going to go away, if you're saying football can't be played for another year, then we might not have football to come back to. And then you have to decide whether people are being, you can't call people heroes for going back into a non-essential sporting venue. But are they being, in a very small microcosm sense, are they being heroes for their industry? Are they risking themselves in order to keep their industry up and running?
And their families, to be fair to them. I think Tom had a good point before of, like, going back and saying if a player's got a relative who's ill. Do you know what I mean? I can understand them not wanting to go back in that sense.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, there's still more questions than answers at this point. Right, okay, we're going to get a couple. I've got a quick question before we wrap up the podcast today. Diego Albizures, who wrote it phonetically for me. I'm good. I'm far better with, like, Hispanic-sounding names, French-sounding names and all that kind of stuff. Like, I do all right. It's Pajak you want to worry about. Pajak's his name, says Machin. He says, what was the first footy match you've ever attended at Anfield? Mine was Middlesbrough game at the end of 16-17 when you had the live show, and I met you guys afterwards. My surname is pronounced Albizures, by the way. Thanks once again. Yeah, it was a boss night. That game was dead stressful, but we had a good laugh, a good party at the end of the season for that one. My first game, I actually can't remember my actual first game. My dad would probably, but the first I remember was the last game of the season at Anfield, certainly. I think it was in 1990 when we lifted the league title. I was there for that, which is mad because I couldn't tell you anything about the game. I remember Kenny Dalglish coming on, and I remember seeing us lift the title, but I couldn't tell you anything else about the game. I think we played Derby County. So that's like, yeah, back in 1990. And past that, yeah, there's like, obviously I went loads as a teenager and stuff, but yeah, that was the first one that I remember, sort of.
I think my first one was a Youth Cup game. I think it was a semi-final, and I got told when I grew up that I fell asleep through it. So that happened. But the first one, I was cleaning out one of the rooms, just having a tidy in quarantine, as you do. And I found loads of magazines, and I was like, I don't remember going to these games at all. But the first one I can definitely remember was United 2-1. I think it was the third round of the FA Cup, where there's a ball over the top there, it gets flicked on by Cadell, I believe, and then their Kite volleys it into the bottom corner. And I remember, because the Manx were terrible that game in terms of what they were shouting at us and everything, and they were just giving us loads of like vitriol, and it was disgusting. And then we scored and they were just quiet, they didn't say a thing after that. We all got to sing back at them tastefully, and they were just silent and all walked out with their heads bowed. And that might be one of my favourite games I've ever been to at Anfield, just because of the whole situation around it and the way that we gave it to them, basically.
Amazing. Errol?
Yeah, I can't remember my first game when I was a kid, because I remember my mum got one of her mates from work to take me, because it was just me and him when we was kids. So he took me and he stepped in, and I think it was either a cup competition or a reserves game as my first ever one when I was a kid. Got to a few of them, but remember one from, I remember when I was, I think I must have been in probably year 11 in school, when we went and watched Liverpool play Bolton on Boxing Day. That was quite a good one, just because the person that got us the tickets was playing for the team as well at the time. So that was always a memorable one.
Are you trying to avoid name dropping Yossi Benayoun again?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But So that was probably one of the more memorable ones when I was a kid, like at Anfield, definitely.
Go on, Ross.
Liverpool v Charlton in 1996.
Wow.
Coca-Cola Cup. I don't remember a lot of the game, but I googled it so I can tell you about it. 13th of November, so I would have been seven. Mark Wright scored, Jay Redknapp scored, and Fowler scored twice. I went with my dad, brother, my uncle, my two cousins, sat in the cop. The only thing I can remember was having a Twix at half time.
I miss Charlton being in the Premier League. I was thinking about this the other day, is these old teams, like Premier League stalwarts that were in there throughout, from when I remember, so the whole of the first bit of the 90s, early 2000s, you just don't see them anymore. You don't hear about them anymore.
No, not Premier League stalwarts, Tom.
No, but I remember them vividly being in my Premier League book to get stickers with.
I think it's interesting. I think everyone has got like an idealised 20 teams in their head, which they think of as being Premier League teams.
Yeah.
And I bet generationally it changes. So like I'll have like Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds United in mind, where you probably won't have. But yeah, it is an interesting one. It's funny about the first game thing, because I found a load of old videos of me when my kids were young on a hard drive. I've been backing up to and forgotten about, and I found the Barcelona 4-0 friendly game that I took the kids to. So the first game, Liverpool game they ever went to, Penny would have been about 8 months, if that, 8 months old, and Jack was there for four, and she slept for half of it in her mum's arms, and it was too noisy for him, so he ended up with like headphones on watching his mum's phone, watching YouTube while we battered, but well, Leo Messi and Suarez got the pants pulled down in front of the biggest ever capacity for a football game at the new Wembley. They've got literally no memories of being in there. But that's the beauty. I mean, it was the anniversary of the 92 FA Cup final the other day, and I was nine for that. And I remember more about the journey down and the being around it than I remember. I couldn't say anything, you know, of my memories of watching the game are minimal. I remember a few little high points of being picked up and seeing the top of the FA Cup being lifted from down the stands. And I remember mainly my dad bought me Super Mario Land to play on the Game Boy on the drive down. But
that's the problem, is I've been to a game a few times, and you see like when you stood in the cop, the kids can't see. They just can't see. I remember when we played Spurs 2-0, and you and Chris went up into the main stand, because I think it was kind of the first time, and I was in the cop, and I was sat there and this kid, like, we battered them 2-0 and everyone was in full voice. I was giving it beans and the kid kept, like, looking around and hearing all these songs that he knew, and he just started shouting them out, grew in confidence as the game went on. And I was just like, he's going to be a proper Liverpool fan in the end, because that's one of them where you can formulate memories at that point. Yeah. And you can actually see, because people were accommodating him because he was on the side. It was boss to watch this kid just, like, his eyes light up when we've scored the second and we're just giving it to Spurs. It was great.
Oh, that's absolutely class. I think it's as good a way as any to end the podcast on a nice nostalgic high note. Guys, thank you very much for joining us. If you want more from us, we've got a load more questions from you guys. We're going to be answering them on the subscriber Q&A. We're going to literally roll straight into it, but if you want to check it out, you have to go to theredmentv.com and sign up. It is very, very good indeed. Oliver Ronan asked whether it's a Shag Maddie Kill, Machin Payjack or Dutton. It's going to be one to find out. Best biscuits during lockdown. Favourite UK holiday destination. Who of the Redmen TV staff play as the main characters in The Incredibles, and a whole lot more as well. Tupac or Biggie. There's a big one. There's an obvious answer to that. But yeah, join us on theredmentv.com for the Q&A. And other than that, we'll see you very, very soon. Ta-ra.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.